Your branding is the visual stuff. Mm-hmm. So your logos, your fonts, your colors, the imagery you use. So anything visual to help people recognize your business in the thousands of marketing messages they see every day. Your brand is what they then think and feel about your business once they've recognized it.
Giles Etherington is a brand expert who turned his 30-year experience with global brands like Heineken, Volvo, and Kellogg's into a multi-award-winning consultancy.
Through his proven three-stage process, he helps entrepreneurs think and act like big brands,
turning their target audiences into loyal customers.
It's the psychological and emotional connection they have with your business. Mm-hmm. And it's really important we think about our brand before our branding. Most small businesses don't.
What is the biggest mistake businesses make?
They think their logo is their brand, and they don't do the thinking that's needed about creating emotional connections. They tend to talk about themselves rather than talk to their ideal client.
So how do you switch that paradigm?
Competition, bingo. I take the homepage or the about page from each of their competitors. Mm-hmm. Take out the name, and then I give the clients the list of the competitors. I want you to match up the wording to the thing. Mm-hmm. First one comes along. Oh, that's easy. That's so-and-so. Third, fourth, fifth, they start to realize everyone is saying the same thing. If you and all your competitors are saying the same thing, how are you helping them pick you?
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Pod Files. My name is Bogdan Bratis. Thank you for joining. So today we have Giles Etherington on the podcast. He's an amazing guy. I met at a networking event. We talked briefly about branding and brands. And then he showcased a game of, like, I think it was pasta or something.
Spaghetti.
So you showed me exactly what branding has an effect on how a product appears in the front of an audience. And I think that's quite interesting. And today we're going to talk about brands. Branding is going to explain us first thing first the difference between the two of them, because I'm also like a little bit confused about that myself. So that's really great to get an insight from an expert. He's based in Glasgow.
In Melrose, in the Scottish Borders.
Right, so it's not too far away. It's
not
like
too,
an hour away from here. He is the founder of Brand Satellite. Basically, you're helping people with brands, branding, you establish their brand and stuff. And you've been doing this for how many years?
I've run Brand Satellite for 11 years.
11 years. But you are in this domain for, because I know that you've been working with loads of big brands like Nestle, Heineken, Mitsubishi and all sorts.
Yeah, I started off, my first job was in a big advertising agency. So I've been doing this for over 30 years now.
Wow, that's a long time. First thing first, like, how did you get into this business?
I was at a careers evening at school when I was 15, and there was a lady sitting at a table when no one was talking to her. So I wandered over and I said, what does a graphic designer do? Mm. And she spent 10 minutes explaining her job. And at the end of that, I went, you get paid to do that? So I went home that evening and said, right, I'm going to be a graphic designer. And that was how it all started.
So that started very early then?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Went on to do graphic design at college for 2 years, then a second college course for another 2 years, which was graphic design and advertising. Mm-hmm. And there in the second year of that, you chose whether to be a graphic designer or whether to go into advertising. Mm-hmm. And to me, graphic design was making things look nice. Advertising was having ideas. So I chose the advertising route.
Yeah, amazing. I just want to ask you first thing first, the misconception between brand and branding. What's the difference?
This is something that I think not only businesses struggle with, but a lot of people in my industry struggle with. So your branding is the visual stuff. Mm-hmm. So your logos, your fonts, your colors, the imagery you use. So anything visual to help people recognize your business in the thousands of marketing messages they see every day. Your brand is what they then think and feel about your mm-hmm. business once they've recognized it. So it's the psychological and emotional connection they have with your business. Mm-hmm. And it's really important that we think about our brand before our branding. Mm-hmm. And most small businesses don't.
They'll do it the other way around.
Yeah, they'll go and get a logo, job done.
Yeah,
and it's that's not the case.
It's the feel. It's the feel. Like, for example, if I want to buy an Apple phone, right? I'm looking at Apple as, let's say, a luxurious company. I see like more of a premium company, and the feel you get from the company, that's the brand.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily the logo, the Apple logo and stuff like that. These are here just to enforce it, right?
Yeah. I mean, the branding is very important to fit with the brand,
mm-hmm.
but it's the feel, it's the experience you have with that company. Mm-hmm. That's the brand. You know, we use the emotional part of our brain that dictates our decision-making.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what the brand does. It connects with your emotions.
What's the most challenging part of building a brand? Because let's talk about the brand, because I think that's more difficult to actually figure out.
Yeah, the most challenging part is finding the time to really think about it. Because we're all just so busy
mm-hmm.
doing stuff that to actually find that time to stop and think about what everything that needs to go into your brand. That's the hardest bit. And then I suppose the second hardest bit is we try and do it ourselves.
Yeah.
And I'd say it's virtually impossible to do yourself because you have such a preconception of your own business, your own services or product that you actually, when you start talking about it, you forget to talk about certain bits
mm-hmm.
because you assume other people know it. So it's really important that you get external perspectives.
Yep.
And I'm not saying use me as a brand mm-hmm. guy, but it can be other people, but just really try things out on people to really get to understand.
Like many businesses, what they do, like they run surveys just to see what people think about their brand. So definitely you need that outside perspective because you're in that business, you've done this for so many years, you got attached to it. And now maybe something speaks, you know, to yourself in a certain way. Let's say you want to say like, I want this company to look edgy, or I want this company to look friendly, or whatever. But maybe that's not what it is, right? So you would come in and you would tell them, look, this is what I feel about your services. The services will fit this kind of brand and stuff like that. That's how what your role would be.
Yeah, but I would never go in and say this is what I feel about it.
Okay.
It's always what your ideal customers
mm-hmm.
want to feel about
Correct.
It.
Correct.
I don't impose a brand on mm-hmm. you. I will extract the brand from you,
mm-hmm.
but it has to be relevant to your ideal customers, not
I
to
like
me, because mm-hmm. I may not be their ideal customer. If I am, great, it makes that a bit easier.
So how do you identify your ideal customer for your business? Why is that important, first thing first? To ensure that you identify the right, like, what's your customer base?
It's really important. So many reasons why mm-hmm. Identifying your ideal customer is important. First of all is because, I mean, I work with a lot of small businesses.
Mm-hmm.
So what tends to happen at the very beginning is the owner of the business tends to be the brand. So it's, and mm-hmm. we don't have A, much time, and B, we have a certain amount of energy. Now, if we're spending or wasting that time and energy on the wrong clients, it soon becomes really draining on you as a business owner and as a person. So if we can work out who our ideal customers are, you're much more likely to be energized by working with them.
Mm-hmm.
Not so much the time, the energy is really important. So that's the main reason for getting to identify them. But also when you're communicating with people, if you can clearly articulate who your ideal client is, their ears will prick up and go, oh, that's me. And they'll continue listening.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas you could try and talk to everybody, which a lot of small business owners mm-hmm. try and do, nobody listens.
So what's the first step in actually identify your ideal customers? Like, what should you create some sort of guide? Like, let's say a customer avatar or something? Like, how does that work?
Yeah, definitely. Avatars are absolutely brilliant to do. But I mean, the first step is really working out exactly who you can provide a service. I'll talk services rather than keep saying service and product.
Mm-hmm.
You can provide a service to, and also who you enjoy providing a service to, because it's your business. If you set up your own business, you want to have fun doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got to really enjoy working with the clients that you're looking for. And then yes, avatars are great. And now with AI and ChatGPT, they can really help with avatars because mm-hmm. you if you just do it again from your own experience, you're making lots of assumptions. ChatGPT will broaden those assumptions. Mm-hmm. So just go in there, and once you've identified what your ideal clients are, ask ChatGPT.
So how would you use ChatGPT?
I would say, for example, let's say with a really good example for me was I was working with a menopause coach.
Uh-huh.
Now me, and as a man,
yeah, it's quite hard to
what do I know about their ideal clients? So I went to ChatGPT and explains in a fair bit of detail what my client did. And then I said, can you give me three avatars for people that would be ideal to them? Mm-hmm. They came up with Jane, Claire, and That's Sarah. Crazy. And then carrying on, because ChatGPT is all about the questions you ask it.
Yeah.
So carrying on asking it more questions to get deeper and deeper and deeper
into it. Yeah, that conversation going with it, yeah.
We created three very good avatars. And then when I showed them to the client, she went, they're amazing. Yes, mm-hmm. That's my ideal client. So she now had these three avatars as individuals to think about. Rather than thinking about your target audience as a whole, she had three people in her head now mm-hmm. that she can, and once you start thinking about people as individuals, you can start understanding feelings and emotions.
I'm like curious, like what would be the first steps to implement in your business to start building a brand? Like what are the things that we need to think about first?
There's lots,
but, I know. But
I always start with the ideal client mm-hmm. because everything else you then do,
it's around that.
Is there in your head. Mm-hmm. And that's really important. You know, you haven't got a brand without having clients. It's as simple as that. Mm-hmm. So they're so important. So yeah, start with your ideal clients. Then I tend to look at competitors, because you've got to remember your ideal clients have got a choice.
Mm-hmm.
You're not the only answer to their problem. There's lots of people out there. So look at your competitors, see what they're doing. But again, look at your competitors from your ideal client's perspective, not yours. And
so how do you switch that paradigm?
Well, when I'm working with a bigger team and I'm doing a brand workshop, I do this thing called competition bingo. And what I do is I take the homepage or the about page from each of their competitors, mm-hmm. Take out the name, obviously. And then I give the clients the list of the competitors. So here are the names. I'm now going to put the wording up on each slide. I want you to match up the wording to the thing. Mm-hmm. First one comes along. Oh, that's easy. That's so-and-so. Second one. Oh, I think that's so-and-so. Third, fourth, fifth. They start to realize everyone is saying the same thing.
Yeah, this is like a focus group you're running. Yeah. So just to find out like from real people exactly.
But if you and all your competitors are saying the same thing, how are you helping them mm-hmm. pick you?
Mm-hmm. So you need to differentiate yourself a little bit.
Definitely need to differentiate yourself.
That most businesses, they don't make it past the 10 years of existence. Mm-hmm. And most of the time is because of branding. Maybe they have a great service. The operation is working great for them. Everything works great, but the branding itself is maybe not aligned with what they're doing. And then obviously you need a long-term strategy to make sure that you go above that 10 year and further. Can you explain how would you be able to overcome this? And how would branding or brand, how your brand would help with that?
Right. Okay. Well, I'm going to start by using a little bit of research. That figure's even more scary. More than 50% of businesses don't make it to their fifth birthday, let alone their 10th birthday.
Yeah.
It was Forbes magazine did a bit of a survey on this, and there's eight reasons why businesses fail. And those include no niche, no vision, no marketing plan, and no consistency. Mm-hmm. So they're pretty much all brands. So mm-hmm. half the reason why businesses fail.
So let's talk about no brand. These four things. Yeah. Like, let's start with no vision.
Vision's really, really important because you need something basically to keep you going. Anyone that's ever started their own business knows how difficult it is, how up and down it is, how many bad days you have. Now, if you haven't got a clear vision of what you want to do, it's going to be really hard to get past those bad days. But also, your clients want to know what your vision is. What you know, they want you need them to buy into what you're doing. Mm-hmm. So you've got to be very clear about what you're doing.
So you need to showcase that to them.
Yeah.
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 Okay. Niche.
not my favorite word. And that's why I prefer to use ideal clients than niche, because you're not always niching down, but you need to be able to talk to your ideal clients in a way that they go, that's me, they get me. Mm-hmm. So it's not necessarily a niche as in an industry or a demographic. It tends to more be in a mindset. Your ideal clients are probably going through the same pain points, the same problems, and have the same mindset about stuff. So if you can talk to that to show that you can understand and empathize with them, they're more likely to go, this guy gets me.
Yeah, more focused on whatever they need, right? Marketing plan, how do we build that, right? So that's a long process.
It is a long process. And, you know, that's I suppose one of the problems I face is I help people create their brand and then they walk away and then they just get busy again and they don't do anything with it. Mm-hmm. Marketing plan is really important. We're all having to market our businesses mm-hmm. pretty much every day.
If there's no marketing, there's no air in the business. Yeah. You can't breathe.
Yeah.
It's kind of like that.
And it's got to be done. You're very few businesses are lucky enough to have clients walking through their door wanting to work with them. You've got to be out there talking about your business all the time. I don't believe it's necessarily having to sell your business. Mm-hmm. It's just communicating your business. If you've got your brand right, your brand will stop you having to sell, because people will go, I want to buy into that concept. Mm-hmm. So it's more about just communicating. But it's
what kind of activities would you need to run to make this work properly?
It's going to vary from business to business. But I suppose the one we all talk about at the moment is social media. Mm-hmm. It's not free. I'll mm-hmm. get out of the way, because everyone says, oh, social media is free. It's not. It takes up your time. It takes a lot of your time.
And then time is money. Invest into like recording and making sure that everything looks good and whatever. Yeah. You need to pay people to make it for you. If you don't want to DIY it, most people like just DIY and make very bad job of it. Yeah. And then all the brand and everything doesn't align properly with everything they want to do. So that's something that for example, my business helps out with, making sure that everything looks good, sounds good. It's spot on in terms of like what their brand is already. You already established that for them. I'm just going to take that, just going to make sure that it fits from that perspective. Yeah, it's very important and it's not free.
No. And I think the other thing that's really important to remember is just being able to provide the service you provide mm-hmm. is not enough.
Of course not.
Because there are so many other people that
you
can
may
do
get
that.
Referrals from that, but that's about it. But even referrals may not come because you don't have a marketing plan, because people would refer other people to you because they feel something about your business. It's not because they necessarily like the service per se, but they feel great making business with you. So brand would help with that, right?
Yeah. And I believe that you have to do something every day mm-hmm. to promote your business, whether mm-hmm. that is a social media post, whether that is writing an email to a potential new client, mm-hmm. whether it's writing a press release, or other paid stuff, advertising, mm-hmm. exhibitions, networking. Every day you should be doing something to go, I'm getting my business out there.
Yeah, what I do in my business, for example, I've got like an action plan at the start of the year, and I've got a few objectives I want to hit. I want to hit this amount of posts on Facebook, on social media, whatever. I want to hit this amount of podcast episodes. I want to start something new, right? Could be a referral program. I don't know, anything like that. And I want to make sure that as I go through the year, I act on each and everything and I make it happen. I delegate to other people, right? Like certain things, if I can automate them, that's good. And usually when you have that plan in your mind, you have you have a plan first and first, you have goals, you have objectives, then you're more likely to actually succeed.
Yeah.
If you just run around and you just try to my competitor is doing that, I should start doing it. And then that week you start doing that and then you abandon the entire thing and then you start something new and then you never finish something and you never actually make something that actually works and brings clients.
That's sort of even more pertinent with social media, because you're normally starting with a very low follower base.
Yeah, that's a problem, because the only followers you will get is the people that already follow you because they're your friends. So would you advertise, pay paid advertisements on Facebook and stuff? Depends.
There's not a yes or no answer. It does depend. You know, I've got some clients that we're now experimenting with paid advertising on Meta, mm-hmm. and on LinkedIn. I've tried it with other clients and it doesn't work. I've tried it with some clients and it does work. So it all depends. Again, it's that, where is your target audience?
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not. I was working with a client recently, and they were doing Facebook ads. And when I sat down and talked to them, their ideal clients aren't on Facebook.
Yeah. So could be like a certain type of business, yeah. where people don't, like the ideal client will not stay on Facebook necessarily, and they won't buy into the product. For example, for my podcast, production business, I would say like it's more on LinkedIn, because usually the people that become my clients are leaders, you know,
business owners.
Owners and stuff like that. So it's more of a B2B approach. Mm-hmm. If it's B2C, then probably you go Facebook, Instagram.
The great thing about LinkedIn as well, it's a really positive channel.
Yeah, it's not a lot of fakes and stuff. No. Yeah, there's not a lot of fake accounts. And I had a weird experience with Facebook where I would exclude, you know, certain countries where scams and fakes would come out of. I still would get fake accounts no matter what. No matter how niched my targeting would be, if I would target just Glasgow, for example, I would still get all sorts of accounts creeping into my ad, and I would get likes from people that are maybe not interested in my services, which is quite a shame, because Facebook is used by so many people around the world, but it's still not able to target properly. No. That's my opinion.
No, there's a lot of trial and error. Even once you've decided to use one of the channels, a lot of trial and error getting exactly right.
You need to do A/B testing and all that. Let's play a game. This is going to be something outside the context of the podcast. I've got a few questions here. You just need to pick two.
Right.
Two questions from here.
Right. Okay. Right. If you could instantly master one skill unrelated to your career, what would it be? I suppose this is a little bit like the superhero question. What would your superpower be?
Yeah.
I would love to be able to speak every language in the world.
Oh, that would be amazing, right?
Yeah. Just to be able to go anywhere into a bar and have a conversation. That'd just be amazing.
Imagine. Yeah. That would be great. So I speak two languages. I speak English. Well, I speak, and then Romanian as well.
Right.
And I found speaking a foreign language is really empowering. It's like almost having two souls.
Yeah.
It feels like that. So imagine like doing that, you know, having the skill of talking multiple languages. I know a few people that talk like 10 languages and
unfortunately I don't. And I think one of the reasons is because so many places you go, people do speak English. Let's be fair, it's not English, it's American. They've learned it all from the movies. But I was recently in, I had my sort of bucket list trip to Japan.
Uh-huh.
And of all the countries I've been to, there you can't get by with a little bit of Japanese. So that was very much sitting there with the translator app.
So do you speak any other languages or is just English?
No. You know, I can get by with a little bit of French and a little bit of Spanish, but only enough to start the conversation to try.
So I learned English back in Romania while I was in school. And to be honest, even though you learn it, it doesn't necessarily like work until you actually go in the foreign country and you start using it daily.
Yeah.
So it's one of the things that's going to make a difference. I know that there's like some AI tools now where you can talk with an AI, let's say polyglot or whatever you want to call it, because they can talk any other language. And you can have a conversation with an AI. And that's maybe that could help, you know, with people like learning English, because sometimes you need to have conversations. You can't necessarily learn a language from books only. You know, you need to listen and to talk actively.
I've got a friend of mine who's learning Chinese at the moment, which I think is fantastic.
And that takes a long time. So let's go with the next one.
Right. What is the strangest thing you've ever Googled?
And that feeds you. You Google a lot, I would say.
I've Googled many, many things, yes. I suppose, again, as a man, Googling about menopause is quite an interesting one. Strangest thing I've ever Googled.
This is quite a hard one.
It is quite a hard one. Strangest thing. I can't think of one specific, but it's probably during a conversation with my teenage sons and them having such a rigid view on something, and they tend to have found that view from a social media reel or something that they've watched. So we'll then Google
to see
other
exactly.
stuff to get the other side of the argument. And some of those.
Google is a crazy place nowadays. I remember I was just talking with Craig Campbell, who's SEO guru based here in Glasgow, and he had the exact same question. He gave me a crazy answer. but I just told him, like, Google used to be a place where if you would type something, you may find the answer,
right.
But now it's almost the case all the time that you'll find it. There's no question about it. And if you don't, you go to AI. AI will find it for sure. Something super simple, like how to tie your shoe lenses or whatever, anything you'll find.
I've always wanted to do a pub quiz where people are allowed to use, because you know normally a pub quiz is you see someone on the phone, it's like that's cheating. It's like they're allowed to use Google.
Okay,
but the questions are the sort of questions you wouldn't know without Googling. But
and see who finds
necessarily
the answer first.
whether you get the right answer or not. So I think that'd be really interesting.
Yeah, because you also get multiple perspectives in there. Yeah. So, what is the biggest mistake businesses make when it comes to branding?
I'd say where we started from. Yeah, they think their logo is their brand.
Yeah.
And they don't do the thinking that's needed about creating emotional connections with our customers.
Yeah, so they don't think about the brand first.
Yeah.
To go straight to branding.
To follow on with that, they tend to talk about themselves rather than talk to their ideal clients.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because a lot of people themselves could be like we or I. They use those words in a lot of their marketing, right? Instead of like talking about you, this is what you need. This is how we can help, you know, stuff like that. I think that's, I learned about that myself while, you know, creating proposals for clients and stuff like that. In the beginning, I used to like talk about like, this is who I am. This is what I do. This is why you should hire me and blah, blah, blah. And then I realized that actually you need to talk about the problems and the solutions.
Yep.
And that's kind of like, you know, what you need to talk about, because what they are looking for is a solution to whatever problem they have. That's what your business will create, will be able to help with. And if you go straight to the point, it's more likely you're going to get a client.
Not only is it the problem they have, but it's the timing of that problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you may talk to them and they may be having the problem, but it's not painful enough yet for them.
Yeah.
I've had plenty of clients that I've spoken to and it's maybe 2 or even 3 years later. That they're going, right, Charles, I need to solve this problem. So
that's great.
And that's why having a consistent brand.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to say.
So they keep in your mind and keep coming back to you.
They're always there.
Because, we talked about, we met at a networking. If you go networking, think you're going to get business, you're going to mostly times come away disappointed. But if you go to networking to grow your network and even to point people who are suffering a pain point that you can't help towards someone within your network.
Yeah,
that's where networking really works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I started doing networking this year only. Until then, I used to live in Southampton.
Nice.
Southampton is not as active as Glasgow, for example. There are a few networking events going on there, but London, obviously, more activity there. But I started doing this, and to be honest, from just one networking event, you get so many connections, you talk with wonderful people, like-minded people, you get surrounded by these people as well, you get ideas, you know, so it's really good. And then obviously if you can help other people as well, they remember you.
Yeah.
So it's really powerful. And face-to-face connections, you can't beat that, right? Because Facebook and LinkedIn and all that, it's all, you know, controlled by the algorithm and all that. But when you go meet people face-to-face, it's something completely different.
Yeah.
I came across this phrase on your website. When you're inside the jar, you can't read the labels. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, it's a quote I heard about two and a half years ago. And it was a guy, I was on a Zoom call with and some Americans on the call, and as one of the American guys said it, and it's just like, as soon as I heard it, go, that's it, that's going to now be my catchphrase. Because what it is it sums up pretty much every small business owner. We're so busy in our business, thinking about our business and the problems we've got and the stuff we need to do on a day-to-day basis, that we're not looking at how other people see our business. And so when I now stand up in networking or I'm doing a pitch, I start with, when you're inside the jar, you can't read the label. And I look around the room and the amount of people just going, yeah, okay, that's me.
Yeah.
So again, that relates, empathizes with the situation they're in. And it also emphasizes the thing about you can't do it yourself. I mean, that networking where we met, I did a talk, and at the end of it, I did an exercise about creating your purpose. And someone stood up and read out what they'd written down. And I just went to the rest of the room, do you now understand what that person does? And quite a few people very quickly went, no, I don't. And that's, again, what this saying does, is you think you're saying the right things, but so much of it isn't being said because it's in your head and you already understand it, and you also assume other people understand it. So when you come out and say something, you're actually not being as clear as you can be. You've almost got to treat people like idiots, as though they know nothing about what you do, and then start from that point of view rather than assume they know something about you. Because most of the time they'll be polite and go, that's really interesting, and walk away going, I've no idea what they do. But okay, because the way I do it, I'll ask, did you just understand what they said? And then, no, sorry.
Before we dive back into the episode, I want to give a quick shout out to SaaSPod. Not only are they the masterminds behind this podcast, but they also power dozens of other shows you know and love. SaaSPod offers a flexible pay-as-you-go podcast production service that grows with you. Whether you need help choosing the right equipment, booking guests, editing, or setting up your podcast, they've got you covered. The best part? The team at SaaSPod isn't just professional. They make the entire process fun and stress-free. If you've been sitting on a great podcast idea, now is the time to bring it to life. Visit SaaSPod.com and use the code TPF2025 to get 20% off your first production package. That's TPF2025 for 20% off. All right, let's get back into the episode. It's actually good to ask, right? A lot of times, do you get me? Like, do you understand? I do that a lot because, you know, some people from politeness, you know, they're just going to say, yeah, okay, good, right? But it's important that they understand. So you need to be active about, you know, asking them if that resonates with them or not. So do you do a lot of events like that? Do you go on these kind of...
You talked about your plan and your stuff. One of my goals for this year was to increase my reputation as a small business brand expert. So, and that means stepping outside your comfort zone, doing things like this, doing talks and stuff, because it's I believe I've got a really important message that people need to sort of understand about creating a brand. And the only way you're going to do that is if you get out there and preach it.
So one thing that I would like to ask you is, like, let's say if I start a business today, there's no money, right? Because usually businesses, small business owners, they start with zero money, or they have maybe a little bit of money and most of the money goes on other things other than branding in the beginning. What is one single thing that I can do to make sure that I'm winning as a small business owner and just starting out, but without money?
Okay. Without money, then the thing to do is put that client hat on and start thinking about what they're thinking about, And as I said earlier, look at your competitors, see what they're saying. Mm-hmm. Can you say something different? Mm-hmm. Both of those things are completely free. Mm-hmm. It's stop thinking about your business from your perspective. Think about it from your client's perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you can even ask, right?
Yeah.
You can go ask, and ask.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, again, with one of the programs that I run, I give people a questionnaire and say, go and give this to anyone in your network who you think is a client. And they go, I can't do that. It's like, why not? Most people are, if asked, most people will help.
Yeah.
Most people want to help. They just don't know you need help.
Yeah,
so exactly. Ask. Give them this questionnaire. And what you might even find that they didn't realize that they were an ideal client for you.
Mm-hmm.
And that may, and that has led to people getting, just sending out this questionnaire has led to people getting business. Yeah.
That's crazy.
So yeah.
That's pretty cool. In the creator space, like the creator economy, what do you think certain trends that kind of start to emerge, what do you think will shape the industry in the next, like let's say in the next few years?
I think the thing that we're all grappling with is at the moment is AI.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to make a massive difference. You know, I'm not a poo-poo of AI. I use it. It's a brilliant tool. But my fear with AI is we're going to lose trust in everything that's being said because we don't know who's saying it.
Mm.
I encourage my clients, especially on LinkedIn or social media, if you're stuck with what to say, ask AI for draft one, but then rewrite it in your tone of voice and your brand in that way you think, so it's authentic to you.
Yeah.
Because there's far too much stuff out there that feels like AI has written it.
Yeah.
Not the per.
And that's actually damaging to your brand and not just your brand, but your mechanism. Like for example, Google doesn't like that. Google will just ban your website for using AI too much. And they have certain mechanisms in place where they can identify that this was written by AI and Google doesn't want their website full of AI stuff. And another thing that I feel is going to become a problem is if people use AI a lot, the content gets recycled.
Mm-hmm.
So it goes back into the system. It gets out. Let's say I'm a business owner. I want to create a post about something. I don't add anything to it, right? I just put it out there and then AI gets that again and again and again. And there's going to be fewer and fewer people creating original stuff, original content, which I feel at the same time, it's an opportunity because the lazy people will just like use ChatGPT as it is, not doing anything with it. And the people that really want to make a difference, they're going to create original content. So basically it's reshaping the entire space.
It's taking away authenticity. It's taking away personality. Mm-hmm. So it's really important that we remain ourselves as human beings and it feels like it's written by a human being. I mean, I know someone who now deliberately puts spelling mistakes in their posts just to say,
this
is an AI.
Yeah.
You know, because if it's AI, it would be spelled, or, you know, a lot of people still leave the Z's in rather than the S's because, of course, it's Americanized and stuff like
that.
Right,
right, right.
But yeah, it's important to, it's a great tool. Someone described it the other day as like having a whole bunch of graduates from different expertises working for you.
Yeah.
And that's a great way to think about it. It's helping, it's giving you lots of help and useful information, but don't just regurgitate it. It's not gonna work. And it's gonna get more and more harder for us to know the difference between the two.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I saw an Instagram reel the other day and I knew that the whole image was AI, but went to have a look at their profile, and on one day they were on 60,000 followers. 3 days later, they were on 600,000 followers.
Mm.
And this person doesn't exist.
Yeah.
And it's crazy.
Yeah, it's crazy. That happens a lot. I've seen a few instances where certain social media accounts will be created with like personas, like not real people. and they get fame, you know?
Yeah.
People thinking like this is a real person or is not. And to be honest, like some people are tricked about it. Some people aren't, but it's going to become harder and harder to distinguish from what's real and what's not real. Not sure if some regulations would come into place at some point, because I feel like we're getting into some sort of dystopia with that a little bit.
Yeah.
One thing that I like AI, ChatGPT and all that stuff reminds me of is I watched Star Trek a few years ago and I was thinking like, you know, there's a computer, you ask the computer, start the ship, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And the computer would talk to you like a human being.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, oh, when this is going to become a reality in our world, it's going to be crazy. And here it is.
Here it
is. But one thing that I noticed is the computer would not be able to do, would not be able to get outside of their its comfort zone. It would not be possible. Usually the captain would do something outrageous to solve the problem, something that the computer would not think about.
Right.
And they would create like a situation where they solve the problem with courage or with risks and stuff like that, which the computer was not able to take. The computer is very conservative. So that's how I feel ChatGPT is at the moment. Usually it gives you kind of like a generic view of everything. And I use ChatGPT as a brainstorming tool. Mm-hmm. That's what I call it for myself. I use it all the time. But just brainstorming, that's what I do.
I did once do a LinkedIn post using ChatGPT, but what I did is I asked it the question, can you use ChatGPT to create a brand? And of course, luckily for me, it answered, no, you shouldn't, because we don't have that human connection. We don't understand emotions and all that sort of stuff. So I took that word for word and put it into a LinkedIn post.
That's fine. That's really good. That's really good. Let's say if your brand was damaged in some way, right? Especially in the content creation space, that could happen.
Yeah.
Let's say you've got a backlash or something happened and your branding is damaged because of that. How could people recover from something like that?
If you've got a truly authentic brand in the first place, then admitting you've made a mistake and apologizing for it will go a long way to saving your brand. Because again, a lot of people will try and talk their way out of bad damage. I mean, look at Greg Wallace on the TV at the moment. You know, he did a terrible job of trying to get out of it. If he just said, I'm really sorry, I'd like to apologize to everyone that I've done, that's the best thing to do. And then again, then stay on brand. If you've got a brand, stay on it. Take that apology, suck it and suck it up, but then keep going. I mean, I did something with a client of mine, and I was working with them on a LinkedIn Live, and I was doing the back end stuff, and after 11 minutes I realized I hadn't pressed the go live button, which was mortifying for me. But first thing I did is put it live, obviously. Told them it hadn't started. They managed to fix that problem talking around it. And then the first thing I did when it finished, and said, I'm really sorry, my fault, really sorry. And that honesty helps.
Honesty helps.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it helps a lot. Podcasting, right? Podcasting has become like quite a big thing in the last few years, especially after COVID and during COVID. People started recording podcasts remotely, and now it starts to become, you know, more like let's get back, you know, in the studio, human connection and all that. What do you think is the role of podcasting in brands?
Well, it's, you know, we've just talked about AI and not knowing when something's real or not. What podcasting does is you either see or hear, depending on what sort of podcast you're doing, you see or hear that person speaking. Yes, there are going to be AI versions, but hopefully we won't talk about that. So you're getting to understand and know that person, because the person-to-person connection is so important. That so to be able to see it, if you can't have face-to-face meetings with your ideal clients, they can see you, they can see what you're like, and they can get to sort of know, like, and trust you through podcasts. And the other thing about them is they're a great way of you demonstrating your expertise. In the service-based industry, you need to show that you're an expert in what you're doing. Things like this, asking questions and answering them, is a great way of doing that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. So if people want to learn more about you, your course, your services, anything, where can people find you?
Right. Okay. Well, my website is brandsatellite.co.uk.
I like the name a lot.
Thank you very much. But I've also recently, I've created a group brand creation program because, as I mentioned earlier, it's virtually impossible to do this on your own. Mm-hmm. So what I do is it's called the 28-day brand launchpad. Mm-hmm. And what I do is I take a handful of small business owners between 5 and 8 through 28 days of activities. But the important thing is they all feedback on what each other are doing. So you're not just getting my experience and expertise as a brand
expert. Theirs as well.
You're getting all of their expertise because they're all experts in something. Mm-hmm. But you're also getting, every time you do something, you're getting some genuine feedback on it. Mm-hmm. So once by the end of the program and you've created your brand, it's almost like being peer tested. It's not just you thinking this is right. Other people have gone, no, this is right. And also the nuggets you get from other people.
You're getting that outside perspective that we talked about because you've got these people together and everybody is feedbacking on each other, right? Yeah. That's really good. So is this running every month or how do you run it?
No, I'm planning to. So far I've beta tested it and I've run it once. Both went fantastically. I'm hoping to do the next one in January and then it will be every three times a year.
Three times a year. Is this online or is it like face to face?
It's online because it needs to be, but there's one-to-one sessions during it. Uh-huh. And they could be face to face if we're mm-hmm. close enough to each other. Mm-hmm. And even the group stuff, if you want to be in the same room as me while others are on Zoom, mm-hmm. then that's
it's great. In a month, you get your brand sorted. So that's really, really good.
Yeah.
Okay. So they can find that on your website, correct?
Find that on the website.
Okay.
Yeah.
I actually saw it as well. I was wondering about it, what that is. So thank you so much, Giles, for coming to the podcast. It was a great discussion. Thank you guys for watching this podcast or listening to the podcast on all the streaming platforms. Don't forget to review, subscribe to the podcast. And if you want more content like this, make sure that you like it as well and share it. Thanks a lot. And I'll see you next time. Bye.